Okay, Greg, going to meet Dave across the street at the DA's office, 80 Center Street, to meet ADA Grinberg. He told me to meet him here at the
Center, right?
Davy Center.
Have a good night.
4:45. If you can't make it, I'll see her myself. One less person talking, right? Is there a restroom down here? I have to go see first.
100%. No. 100%.
Oh, but upstairs I can go.
Well, you're not going to. We're close.
No, but he's coming for to see the assistant.
I have a meeting.
Oh, do you? Oh, don't go down now.
No, I'm waiting for my lawyer.
Oh, okay.
Good night.
Right, he'll be here shortly, correct? Because these doors are closed.
Because it would be close to my
car. 4:45. We meet here at 80 Center.
You got it.
They're calling him right now to say, where the hell are you?
There you go. Hey, you're paying up good money, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Too much money.
Isn't that always the case?
He says, I'm walking over. I'll be there before 5, though. He just... Excuse me. So he just texted me that he's coming over. He'll be here before 5. His office is on Vesey.
All right.
What time is this closed?
This door closes at 5 o'clock.
Okay,
you have to go around the other way. There's another way.
Okay, I'll just go up to the ADA myself now.
Okay, I don't know if they'll. I don't know if they'll want you.
Yeah. Well, I came here for meeting. Oh no, actually, with the Hogan that I went to.
Same thing, Hogan.
Not before.
No. Oh, it's 6 of 1, half dozen of another. I mean, you got to go back. Of course, you represented that your mouthpiece. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm the plaintiff. I'm the one prosecuting this guy. Okay, so what do you need here?
ID, and where are you going?
To meet ADA Grinberg. Correct. ADA Grinberg. So, ID is here. You need it out?
That will be waiting for you.
No, I'm here right now.
Okay.
Yeah,
good?
If you need me, call me.
Okay.
Thank you, Willie.
Right.
Okay.
I'm upstairs in the bathroom.
Oh, okay. All right, I'm here on the 7th floor.
Yeah. So I guess it makes more sense to ask her to break her oath, right, just so that she's confident that I'm willing to...
No,
Probably because they have to give it to, they would have to give that to the opposing side if they're voting, right?
You brought the corporate, right?
Oh, the lobbyist, yeah. Although I must say, no matter what happens, well, I don't know, of course, what they're going to do, my word is that they don't do anything. They're giving double carte blanche to me.
Well, they don't know where they're going.
Pardon?
They don't know where they're
going. No. They'll know that after the statute of limitations is up, if they haven't been charged, they're going to be like, okay. Well, I do know that I am going to stay away from the parking lot.
Oh, yeah?
I am. Oh.
But the court does do you let?
Well, yeah, I can sublet. I can sublet for 10 months. I get 10% extra when I do that for all of my furniture. I don't have to finish the parking lot. So when I close to it, I get subletted right away. But I'm not allowed to do 9 months. They're not 24 out of 48.
Oh,
and I've already been legally subject. You go through the proper step. Oh, and the landlord tried to block me, and I shoved it through. Yeah. I said, this is the kind of harassment. If the landlord misrepresents the law, I have a limit. Every month my entire home is costing me $700. It's like $8,400 a year, and I do the work. For when I don't have the subway. And when I have the subway, I actually need to make something. So I can tell you, I've got friends and research to do, and places to go to, and libraries, and institutes to do. So come.
Based on the time that I had in front of me, it was either a television or a
You get exercise just walking around.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'll
be right back.
Sure.
Okay.
Let's see what
this
is. I don't want the air conditioner blowing on me. Demonstrate that door too if she wants eventually, but she may not even want them.
That much in particular,
Thank you for meeting us. Lived in this apartment for a long time.
stabilized apartment. His landlords clearly don't like him for a while, for a good long time. He has organized with the tenants in the building into a tenants organization, tenants rights organization, and that's kind of set off the landlord and his son, and been a number of incidents in the past that we could talk to you about as well. But on this particular day, he was just leaving the building, going out to the store. Now, because of the history, he'd been intimidated by the landlord and the landlord's sons before. So just to protect himself, he always keeps his phone on when he's walking through the building, just in case he encounters them, so that you have a record of whatever happened. So he was doing that on this day. He had his phone. He comes down the stairs, checks his mail, has the phone in his pocket because he's checking his mailbox, and then he walks out into the lobby towards the front door to leave the building. And as he gets to the front door, the landlord's son, who's the complainant in this case, is sitting on these steps, just kind of in the back, and he's videotaping. And it's like, that's a pretty intimidating thing. He's lucky he's waiting for him. This was a few days after, 3 or 4 days after Dr. Scott had distributed a newsletter just about some of the violations, just some of the things that he was working on trying to get the building to fix. So he notices this guy behind him and filming him, and he's like, what are you doing? And to kind of diffuse the situation, he's like, do you want me to perform for you? Then the guy walks over to this guy, who's known as Joey in the building, walks over and confronts Dr. Scott at the doorway, and is kind of a little, he can explain it better, but it's like, there's a kind of a little stand up. He's nervous about kind of walking through the doorway because it goes into it's an enclosed vestibule, and he feels that this guy Spend is being physically intimidating and aggressive to him. So they're kind of standing at the doorway, and next thing the Spend kicks him in the groin area, and when he does that, he feels in danger for his life, and then he tries to defend himself by hitting back, and then there's a scuffle where Spend basically punches him and knocks him out on the ground. Then he starts calling for neighbors, with people who he feels are like his friends in the building, comes down and starts telling them something that's demonstrably untrue. He's telling them that Dr. Scott walked over to where he was on the steps and attacked him, and that Spend is saying that he defended himself. He calls 911, the cops arrive, Dr. Scott's lying on the floor, but out of it. And you see that because of the video, a lot of it's audio, but it was just because the phone was in his pocket. But then there's a little bit of video later when the police are there. And it's because the first person to call 911, he's the one, he's saying, I think then some of the other landlord's other son and the super come down and go, oh yeah, this guy, a problem tenant, he assaulted him, and the cops, I think for a while they didn't know what to do, but then they arrested him. And it was the wrong decision. And he really was the victim of assault, and he's prepared to tell you in more detail if you've got questions from him or if you want him to explain it himself. Basically he was knocked out by this guy. He was a young guy, young, well-built, 30-something-year-old guy. Dr. Scott's he's a 69-year-old, university professor. It's why would he be assaulting this guy? It makes absolutely no sense. He's walking out of the building to go do his shopping day before Thanksgiving. when he's, you know, confronted by this guy who instigated it and struck the first blow. So that's why, you know, like, we think that he, you know, the wrong person was arrested. If the police had done their job properly and arrested the right person, it would have been a pretty strong case against them. And, you know, the fact that, you know, Dr. Scott was arrested first, you know, complicates it, but it doesn't change what happened. And, you know, he's still living in the building. He's got a rent-stabilized apartment. You know, he needs to live there. If he's moved, he would be able to get a comparable place. And he's in fear. You know, he's living there, and he doesn't know when he's going to be attacked again. And it's like, you know, it's the landlord's got two sons, and then a period of three sons, and, you know, they're all, you know, physically intimidated. They've all threatened him in the past. They've threatened to kill him in the past. So much so that Dr. Scott's wife won't live there anymore. She actually moved out, and because of the intimidation and the fear. So that's it. That's it. You know, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. Did I leave anything out?
I mean, there's history that I think shows their actions more than I can give you now.
You want to tell about that?
Well, whatever else you have to say.
Okay. So thank you again for letting me come in. I just thought I would let you know a little bit about who I am and my character before, and then I'd tell you about the immediate history at the building. So I haven't been in a fight since I was 21. I was an athletic basketball. That's 48 years ago. After that, in college, I got into ballet. I became a ballet dancer and a ballet teacher. And I went back to school and became a PhD in philosophy and started doing philosophy, dance, and ancient Greek philosophy. Both of those professions absolutely forbid any kind of violence. Even if somebody insults you, you walk away. You don't react. It's you're ostracized if you ever get in the fight. The only time you could ever get in the fight is if somebody does what Joey did to me and traps me in this doorway here where this little foyer that he was talking about. The only way I could get out is if I went that way. The problem is this outside door pulls in. And Joey is now pulling in and blocking me. I'll explain that. So there was no way I could get away. So I became the director of doctoral studies at NYU in the late 90s. I was doing a postdoc at Princeton in philosophy. I then went to work for IBM because the grass was much greener and much higher on the other side. So starting in 2001, I worked for IBM full-time for 15 years until I retired in 2016. And at the same time, I'm writing my philosophy. And I'm getting published by Cambridge and Oxford. And then 2 months before Joey knocked me out, I did the second edition. And I'm becoming globally famous. I mean, I'm not an embittered old man who has nothing to do in life. You can see the testimonials on both sides in the new book reviews. World famous people are saying that I'm changing the foundations of Western aesthetics. So that was published 2 months before. When I'm going out to get the shopping done, I'm working on these two books that have deadlines. A month later for this one, which is a short version of this one for specialists, and this one is on theology, on Aristotle's metaphysics and theology, and it undercuts the whole tradition of Western Christian metaphysics. So this is how revolutionary my work is. No book review has been done of this because it just came out in May. But if that is anything like the one from September, it's another blockbuster. I mentioned this just to show I don't have time to be messing around with things if I can help it, because I need to get work and books done, okay? So that's kind of my values in life. Let me give you the history then, just for a couple minutes at the most, of my tenancy at the building. So I moved in 1998, and everything was fine. And I lived there for 17 years before son Joey moved in under very suspicious circumstances and started harassing people in the building to get some of them to move, older tenants to leave. They wanted to object. I have them on recording, say they wanted to object up the rent. So he moved in 2015, and that's when a lot of stuff happened. My only problem ever with a landlord was in 2009. I had the audacity to, after my first wife and I were divorced, about a year and a half later, I met this French teacher, jazz singer, and we started a romance, and she was paying a lot of rent. She moved in. I have a two-bedroom apartment. The landlord, after I had seven other roommates, Hispanic, Asian, white, male, female, for 11 years, he tells me, you can't have her. You got to get her out. She's black. He doesn't want black people in the building. I said, I got a lawyer, shut him down. But then I became a persona non grata. Although it kind of got quiet, but maybe they were, 6 years later, because she moved out about a year later, and then there was no issues really to speak of. Until 2015, when Joey moved in with his wife, two children and a third on the way, they moved into a tiny one-bedroom next to the mailboxes, when his father owns 20 buildings. They had a super already. 17 years they've only had a super. He moves in and calls himself the operating agent. It's like, what? You have a super. You've never had an operating agent before. Why now? Well, he starts harassing people. Three tenants end up moving out as a result of this. Some of them came to me because when he started the harassing stuff, they started doing crazy things like turning off the buzzers for 10 days. So I finally, I'm the kind of guy, I mean, I stand up for my rights, and I went to my son, and I got along with Joey up to that point. I said to him, Joey, if you guys continue to do this, I'm going to do what I'm legally allowed to do. I'm going to get a tenants association. And he said, you do that, Ray? Lucky, the brother, and you would see the picture of the guy that got it in the second video I have. Lucky and two others will come over, and you will be gone. And we can get into your apartment anytime, which is true, because by law, they had all the keys. I was shocked. I called the police. Did he touch you? No, can't do anything. I'm telling my wife, be careful. And she's now getting very scared. That was early 2015. Middle of 2015, a month later, my wife and I, our roommate of 2.5 years moved away. White girl, very pretty, went to get married. My wife and I, and she got along very well, it's time to have 2.5 years. She moves to the West Coast to get married, and we take a French engineering student. So I have French as a background, ballet, plus with one of my two languages for the doctor. So I love trying to keep my French up, and so I have a French PhD student who was once in, who was great, and so we get an applicant, great, top engineering student, she's there for 5 months, and as an exchange, she moves in, she's black. We don't care, my wife, she's fantastic. She becomes a good friend, her family has become a good friend of ours, but she's black. So guess what happens a couple months later? They know they can't get her out. She's legal. My wife and I are allowed to have one. We have an extra bedroom that we never use. So they take away the outside, they change the outside building entrance to this door that I'm opening to her, has a lock and has a funny key. And it's very expensive, and only they can duplicate. It's a very kind of computer-sensitive key, then, right? So, and they only give us two keys. And that's when I start the Tenants Association. It's like, actually, we can't live like this with three working adults. And I took them to court, but it took a year and a half before DHR, you know DHR, you know what it stands for? It's the division that takes care of rent-stabilized buildings. So you can go to either housing court or to DHCR, and they overlap. The difference is that housing court you pay for and it's fast. DHCR is slower, but they know all the real estate laws better. So we ended up having to go to both. It took a year and a half, and DHCR threatened them with a $2,000 fine if they didn't give us a third key. And got it. That's the kind of harassment they would do. They would keep losing the appeals, and they would just the inconvenience made the whole that I will leave, right? And so now I'm coming to the important stuff. They did other things. They had me arrested once before in late 2015. They stole money from me. They did an attempted grand larceny of $5,300. The worst thing was that Lucky and two others came over in early 2017. and showed up under a pretext, a ridiculous pretext. And, my wife answered the door and then came back to me. She's shaped. And I take my video and I go out and I have this on video camera. And it's Lucky and another guy and a third guy who used to stalk my wife on occasion. And I get there, you know, what are you here for? So it was a pretext. It was utterly ridiculous. It was the equivalent of changing a light bulb. And none of them were the super. What landlord sends over 3 men on a Sunday who live significantly like in the Bronx and they come all the way over to do the effect, to in effect change a light bulb? Was there, my wife just went, that's it. They're reminding us of the death threat. As Joey said, remember, Lucky and 2 others will come over and you will be gone. My wife, the next week, gave notice to her ad agency, she was a director, and took off to the West Coast, as he said. So, in order to try to salvage the marriage and get away, I sublet the apartment for 14 months, and I took a prestigious position at the University of Texas at Austin as a visiting research fellow for a summer, and right then she went off to California, and then I was visiting her and going to do other research around the world. Then I come back in August because the subtenants leave, and I did it legally, tried to stop me, and I did all the legal things and pushed it through. I come back in August of last year, within 8 days, to the kind of apartment. Within 8 days, they're harassing me again. And on the 24th of August, Jody, twice, harasses me on the stairs. And one of the things he says is relevant to the knockout case. Well, 2 things are relevant. First, and I have made a copy of the video for you, and I've included these 2 videos from August 24th, because both of them show him blocking, harassing me on the stairs, calling me names, right? The second one actually has him blocking me, not letting me walk up the stair in my own building, which is illegal. And he claims it's not in my lease, so I can't do it. Huh. So if I invite Dave for dinner and my lease at 6 o'clock,
okay. You're not welcome.
So the police took a report, but they wouldn't do it. They said, yes, it's a harassment, but they wouldn't do anything. They didn't even warn him about doing it again. They said, okay, it's not addressable. It's, we give you a police report, it's harassment, we do. So I'm giving you that because one of the things he says, and this is the relevant thing to the November 21st assault, is that if we're going down the stairs, he says, we're installing cameras, security cameras on every floor. I was fantastic, great. This would be kind of, you know, to say help ensure security. So they were warning me on August 24th that they're putting in cameras. He said soon. Is that a week? Is that a month? Okay. So now fast forward to some other events too, which I have on recording, to 4 days before Thanksgiving, they weren't doing, they were relapsing, they weren't putting up notices for water, terminals, reverting back to the bad behavior before. So I thought, my book is out, the good book is out in September, I'm working on these 2 others, but now I have time, a little time, to revive the Tenants Association, which had gone dormant when I was away, because other people were afraid and the others who were on it or interested moved away. And I can give you names, I can show you documents, court history, a number of things showing the harassment to at least 3 other tenants. Okay? Serious, very serious. So I create the Michigan newsletter, I get my, because I'm suing them in civil court for that first false arrest from September 2015, and they go to trial me. And I get my lawyer, my Supreme Court attorney, to make sure that I'm writing, that I'm not writing anything that I'm not allowed to write. Because I'm reporting. You sent you a copy of the newsletter, right?
Yeah. Michigan newsletter?
Yeah. So if I don't do
that. So you distributed the newsletter. So
right.
It's completely about talking about issues in the book.
And revealing things like they're lying about fog windows, who's responsible for the repair. All of this stuff. They were furious. This was 4 days before the joy of the trade. So I'll go into what, I'll just fill in a little detail about what he did, but one question is, given that they just warned me 3 months before they're installing security cameras, they're not obligated to tell me where they are. would I dare, with my background, would I dare walk up? He claimed he was sitting. I just walked up to him and hit him with the keys. If this were being filmed, what would happen? Number one, I get arrested for assault. Number two, right? If I just walked up and hit him out of the blue. Number two, I get evicted from my rent-regulated apartment. Because the only way, since I'm 69, the law was, when you're over 62, they cannot even try to put in a family member in your rent-stabilized apartment. That's a common technique. Oh, my family member needs that apartment. And they can get people out. But when you're over 62, they have to go to other apartments first. So there's no way they can get me out as long as I've been a good tenant. And I have them on record in 2015 saying, Greg, you're a good tenant. We like you. You paid your rent on time. And you never caused any issues. I have this on film. This was the month before I started the Tenants Association. So there's no way they can get me out unless I did something like punch the guy in the face. So, I might probably lose the civil court case because they could say, look what Greg did to Joey, like on November 21st. So, I ask you, would somebody with my background be stupid enough, even in a fit of temporary insanity, to like lose all of this just to go hit him in the face? That's the background. So, I'm walking out of my apartment, as Dave said, I put that, and I brought the raincoat, not only the raincoat, which I put it in, in case you listen to the video, because this is the bag. Okay, I had it over her shoulder. So I go downstairs. My recorder is going in this pocket, and when you're walking, it makes a very distinctive sound. And if you have an iPhone, you can just put it in your pocket and walk for 3 seconds and replay it, and you'll see the kind of blustery, scratchy sound it makes. And when you stop, it goes silent, okay? And that's very helpful to determine what's happening, even when I'm not having video going, right? So I walk out, and I've got my bag on, I'm putting the letter in, and then I still have my keys in mine because I was just a mailbox. That's why it happened. I didn't have time to put them in my pocket. Again, I haven't been in a fight, but when I was in high school, I was the only white starter in my basketball team. I learned. Okay. So this is, the mailboxes are here, my stairs are here, and I'm walking out this way, okay? Off in this corner, which is these steps here, okay? So you see these two, four little balls here on the floor? Okay, we can't see the fourth one here, because that's this one right there. So in other words, as you're walking out, this is a blind spot. Over here. Well, that's where he was sitting in the blind spot. Okay. There are three chairs.
You came down here, right? Walked this way.
Right to the door.
He's sitting in
all the way to the
right, which is here on this.
On these stairs.
So he gets to the door, and he doesn't realize that there's somebody there until he opens the door.
And from my peripheral vision, I see. Now, notice that there are some chairs on the side. He's not sitting on the chair. He's sitting on a place I've never seen. I've only seen a tenant here once in 20 years. I don't even know who lives here. And I saw a delivery person here once in 20 years. I have never seen anyone sitting on these steps, especially when there are chairs that you could sit on. So I come to the door, I open it, and you on the tape you hear, 1:19, you hear the distinctive sound of this door opening, which is here, right? You turn it and you pull. And it's provable. This is easy because you hear it many times in the course of the interaction. Without question, at 1:19 as I'm walking, you hear this open. I see Joey and I'm, number one, I'm startled that anyone would be sitting there. Number two, as Dave said, I'm startled that it's him and that he's filming me almost as if he's waiting. Number three, I'm thinking, wait a minute, every time I pass out a newsletter, they do something to me, turn off my lights. We do various things, right? So I think, what's going on? What is happening right now? And so to gain time and to try to be predictable, as Dave said, I say, hey, you're filming, you want me to perform? And inside, you know, on the surface, I'm just being kind of casual and like provocative, right? Like, you you're filming me, you want me to perform. So I do, I say, arabesque, arabesque. Do you know what an arabesque is in ballet?
No.
Okay, so it's when...
It's a ballet.
It's a pose. And it's like this. It's a curve with normally the leg going to the back. I can't lift my leg because I had two back operations. So all I did was go... The important thing about it is if you're the audience, it's a profile movement. So I'm not going at you when I do it. I'm going to the side. So I do arabesque, and I just move my arm arabesque. And then I stop. And I stop right about there. So it's like 14 feet away from him. I just look at him. He gets up, and he said, so he starts saying, "Don't you come at me." Well, I'm getting a little closer to him because I go that way and that way. And it meant I came about 4 feet closer, but I'm not going at him in the sense that I'm going directly at him. Right? I'm doing this profile. So when you listen to the tape and you hear this arabesque, arabesque, it just means I'm doing these zig and a zag, and I stop. So I'm here, and then he stands up, and he says, "Don't you come at me." I said, "I'm not coming at you," and then he walks directly at me. As he often has done in the past, he will walk, and he's filming still. And he walks directly at me, filming like this, and then right when he gets near me, he veers off, so he comes like an inch away. This is technique. I don't know what he tries to do, whether it's to intimidate or to try to get me to push him, and then once he's filming that I pushed him, he can punch me and say, "Well, you see, Greg hit me first." Right? So he just spins right by me, and then he goes to the door, because I yell, I bark at him, I say, "Don't you come at me." And then he walks around me, and he opens the door wide. And he steps back and he motions for me to go. And it's great. I want to go out and go shopping. Great. But I have seen him glance out the window one or two times in all of this. And now I'm doubly worried because it's like, what's waiting for me outside? Why has he looked a couple times outside? He's got two supers in the building. Not just one anymore. Now they have two 30-year-old supers who are big. Are they waiting outside? I don't know what's happening, but you can see that now I'm very nervous. And so he opens the door, and I'm thinking, great, let me get out, let me be aware when I get outside, get the key, pull out my get video once I get outside. I want to have video showing, right? Not just audio. So, fantastic. We're putting an end to this. And I start sidling by him. But, you know, instead of waiting until I go by and just letting the door close and going back to sit, you know what he does? He closes the door on me just as I'm going by him and gets literally a foot away from me. I'm looking at him going, "Oh God, this is what you must, his wife must see when they're in bed," right? But I'm a foot away with his camera right next to my left temple. Now I am really getting into, like, feeling and breathing in danger. And I'm thinking, no, he's not going to do anything to me in a lobby, is he? He's not that stupid, is he? And I'm thinking, you're damn right he is. Look at the other stuff he's done. He does things sometimes very rashly. Well, that's it. Then we have a conversation. We're talking. He calls me a bitch. He's like mimicking me. And I'm going, And when you listen to the tape, you'll understand why there's a whole series of you can't see him. One of us says, "I can see very well, because I can see him that far away. Otherwise, you won't make sense of that audio, right? Unless I believe." So then there's a silence for about 2 seconds. We have a little conversation. We're each trying to embarrass the other. And I want him off of me. And I'm not going to step back, because if I try to get away, and if I take one more step back, and he closes the door and follows it, I am now trapped in this little 5-foot square foyer with this guy who's threatening me, right? So I'm not going to step back unless he goes away. If he backs off, then I'll go and open the door and get out. Right? After nothing's happening, there's a standoff. Well, he did try, as Dave said, he tries to kick me. He knees me, and he misses me and gets me in the upper thigh. And immediately, it's like I'm on a hair trigger because I'm feeling in such danger that the first thing I do is I thrust back to get that his arm off me, and I tried to hit him. And I guess I did hit him, because apparently my key... And notice I had my keys in my hand. So A.D. Grimberg, I don't know if you know much about fighting, but I remember from my high school days, you would never fight holding on to your feet. You've got to be able to close a fist so you can do impact. I'm holding on the keys, but it happened so quickly, I just had to get them off. And that's what he turned his head, I guess, because I saw that there was the cut here. And then he completely apologized. You know, I had a badly sprained wrist, broken wrist. This was broken. This big swelling that the police and the paramedic could see, the tiny chip tooth that's kind of insignificant, and the jaw damage. I could only open my mouth an inch. I don't know if you know, but I thought it was dislocated, but the oral surgeon when I went in there said, no, if it's dislocated, it's either locked open or locked shut. He said, you can open your mouth an inch because I can talk, so therefore it's not dislocated. And what he explained, I don't know if you saw.
Like I said, you got the photos, right?
What, you sent by
email? Yeah, right. But you got the color, it would color top.
Yeah, the color. Okay. So 5 and 8 days later, all that blood drainage and bruising into the neck, the oral surgeon told me, you're going to be able to open your mouth as fast as that blood drains from the mandible where it all swelled up because of either it was the punch or when I hit the floor. And in a way, I'm grateful that I had a broken wrist and a sprained wrist because my brother, who's an emergency nurse, he said by instinct, when people are falling, they just put out. And I don't even remember. I don't remember once he hit me, I was out of it. I say something, an obscenity, but I don't even remember that. I was out when I hit. And I bet you if I had not had my hands out, I would have been hitting full force with my head, and who knows whether I would even be here. So I'm unconscious. The audio is still going. Now, you got it a little long, but you did a pretty good job. Immediately after he knocks me out, he goes and calls 911, right? This guy cracked me in the nose. Even before he's finishing the 911 call, he's calling the intercom to see to bring down this woman who has been an ally of his for years. She's mad at me because
I said... I'm sorry, we don't have a lot of time.
Right.
Can you tell the rest of the facts without editorializing them? Okay. Just tell me what happened without... I know it's hard, I understand.
Yeah.
But just tell me what happened without commenting on speculating what might have been in his head or what.
Okay.
Just tell me what happened.
So she comes down and he says, and this is absolutely crucial, 6 minutes and 3 seconds. Because I'm knocked out around 2 minutes and 10 seconds of the tape, from the beginning of the tape. At 2 minutes and 10 seconds, I'm unconscious. And there are things happening, this colleague. At 6 minutes and 3 seconds, when she comes down, she says, what's happening? And he says, quote, Greg came up with his keys while I was sitting here, and he hit me. And so I hit him back. When you go over the sounds of the tape, and you understand that when somebody is walking, you get this loud scratching noise, and when you're standing still, with silence in the background, you will see that that's impossible. If I had walked up to him and hit him while he was sitting, my phone would have been making that scratching noise. But yet, right before the violence happens, at 2 minutes and 4 seconds, we're standing there right next to each other like this, and it's completely silent, and all of a sudden, you hear me say, how dare you hit me, and I start getting plastered. So the tape proves, I believe, that he's lying when he says to her, Greg came up to me when I was sitting and just hit me. And why would he say that? He needs justification for why he can batter a 68-year-old man.
So that's it. That's the story.
There's a little more, but with the other tape, but it's just but that, this is the core.
That's the essence of what happened. You know, so would you like a copy of the he put out a thumb drive to copy the video?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I have a few follow-up questions,
sure.
And then we have to kind of close this up.
Yeah.
Did you go to the hospital?
Oh yes, indeed. Columbia Presbyterian.
Immediately?
As soon as they got there, yeah.
By ambulance.
By ambulance, and along with Officer Dillon, who apparently claimed, we never understood this in the first hearing when Dave and I showed up for the very first hearing. Either, I don't know if it was you, I guess it was one of your colleagues read out the charge and said that either Joey or I said Happy Thanksgiving at the door, and we couldn't make sense of the rest of it, but when you listen to the tape, nobody said Happy Thanksgiving, so we have no idea where this account came from.
What were your injuries again?
Broken wrist.
That's diagnosed by Columbia Presbyterian?
No, they didn't even take an MRI. They were concerned about CAT scan and brain.
But that was in the medical record they provided to you.
Sure. So that's Dr. Barron.
Fractured
wrist?
Yeah, the fractured right wrist. Badly sprained left wrist. Chip tooth, probably we don't need to talk about because it's so minor. The cheek was all swollen.
Right.
And the jaw was not, I couldn't open more than an inch. It took me a month before I could open my jaw.
Mm-hmm. And you told the police you wanted to press charges against them? On scene, you told the police that you wanted to press charges
In the second tape I gave you. And the reason why there are two tapes, after about 8 minutes, I kind of woke up. I realized where I was. I called 911, and when I called 911, it automatically shut off the recording.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of passed out again, and I woke up again about 5 minutes later when Lucky, the one who threatened us, was there. I don't know if I understood it was his voice, and alarms went off in my head again, but I pushed my video recording button, and it was on my stomach recording. So from that recording, the police come and I tell them the story. I say, Joey hit me down below. I thrust back, and the next thing I know, I'm looking up. And then I give them a short, very short history. I said, the guy has been harassing me. They're retaliating against me. I gave them a little bit to know that this was not just, you know, me attacking him out of the blue. And then they took me to the hospital, and they arrested me, chained me to a gurney for 5 hours,
mm-hmm.
took my phone away.
You have housing court matters prior to this with Mr. Spence?
Oh, yeah.
Are you a plaintiff in those matters?
Yeah, always.
How many of them were there in housing court? Approximately, if you don't remember exactly. More than three?
I would say about 4 or 5. And I also provided law support for one of the other tenants' association members who went there to try to get her key.
Did you prevail in all those disputes?
Virtually everyone.
What does that mean? So you didn't in some?
They got postponed because the attorneys kept postponing it. And finally, I just got rid of the attorney and withdrew without prejudice so I could take some of the charges and add it onto my civil case.
Was Mr. Rick representing you in those housing claims?
No.
You had a different retained attorney?
I didn't even have an attorney to begin with. I don't know if you've ever been in a housing court, but you're allowed to go by yourself. And at a certain point, then I did get an attorney.
Okay. And the civil case, that's active now, that's pending?
Yes.
You represent him?
No. And that's for a separate incident. That's for...
That was a false...
They falsely accused him of...
breaking a window in the stairwell. Joey, not only the one who knocked me out, but his super claimed I broke this window in front of me.
That's the supposite. Have you considered taking these allegations, moving them forward through civil channels? Evidentiary standard is a bit more forgiving?
Well, I hope that's not... If you read what he said, these guys use... civil court... case for them, they pay the money and they write it off on their taxes. I'm concerned that they're going to do this to me again.
Right, and you can't move up because it's a rent-stabilized apartment?
It would be finance. I'm on Social Security. I make $24,000 a year under mm-hmm. Social Security. That's what I live on in New York City. Professors are not known for, you know, making a lot of money. Now, I do have savings from my work at IBM, and so when I quit, it was because I figured I can live modestly. I love writing my books. That's what's important to me in life. I don't have to, you know, I'll go on vacation with my wife, whatever. But you know, I have my books. That's my value in life. So for me to move out, yeah, But basically you're saying, yeah, let them drive you up like they did the other three
times. No, I'm asking, if you're so in fear for your life, what are the options that you have as far as whether it's worth you staying there if you really believe he's threatening
your life? That's a dilemma. That's a dilemma. That's a dilemma.
Is it as dangerous as you're stating yet?
Well, that's why I have mace in my bag. When I walk out, I've got my camera, I've got my mace, and I'm looking at my back, and I let everyone know in my circle at NYU, the ballet world, IBM world, my family. I've got seven brothers and sisters. They all know. If something happens to me, there's almost $100,000 in my final will. If the police don't investigate it well, my family will investigate my death. If I die mysteriously, then they will investigate it. You know.
And you think you're scared for your life? You're scared Mr. Shunt would kill you?
Yeah, you better believe it. He threatened twice.
So I guess I'm just not understanding why I would be running to the other side of the world.
That's what my wife. That's what your wife did.
Why don't you do something?
Well, because I was the only white starter in the black basketball team when I was in high school, and I learned to stand up for my rights, and I don't get scared too easy. I do get scared. And there was a time in my life once where two guys confronted me and I ran. Actually, twice in my life, because it was like, oh my God. But I'm not.
If you're,
I want to stand up. I want to. This is my life in New York City. So why should I be driven out of my apartment by these thugs? Why?
Well, I don't have the answer to that because I'm a prosecutor, and so my scope, my role and scope in this is narrowly the situation that occurred.
November 21st. Right.
With the alleged assault.
Right.
Anything else has to be dealt with either civilly or in court.
Right. I understand.
Right. Just, I don't know whether you can answer this question, but this is what he said about Sven videotaping. Did he provide a videotape to the DA's office?
He did not provide a videotape to the DA's office.
So that's pretty telling.
Yeah, I mean, the case was dismissed against you,
right?
Yeah. On the basis that it was not provable.
Right,
he's the victim of a crime.
Yes, it's just, I can believe that, and I do
believe you.
It's just a completely different thing.
Right, I know.
And there's plenty of people that I believe, and I know something happened to them, something, sexual assaults all the time, domestic violence cases all the time. I have no doubt that somebody is guilty, but I can't meet my evidentiary burden.
So his line on this, where he says he was sitting, and I walked up to him and hit him, and all the noises and the silence show the opposite. That's not evidentiary evidence.
In fact, he knocked him out. You know, the injury to his. That's not like just, a 30-something-year-old guy defending himself. That's somebody like really trying to hurt somebody, and he could have killed him. But that force of a punch is the kind of punch that kills people.
Sure, I don't doubt it. But he's also significantly injured. He has a fractured, dislocated nose that needs to be cosmetically replaced.
Yeah.
Again, that goes to meeting the standard of reasonable doubt and his ability to argue that he was a primary aggressor as well as raise a defense that he was acting in self-defense. Those are all legal aspects I have to analyze before I decide to bring a case forward.
But it even, why would he then lie and say that he was sitting down and I attacked him out of the blue?
Why would he lie based on your ongoing housing and civil disputes?
No, wait, why would he lie while waiting for the police? And you can hear it on the tape at 6:03, while I'm passed out there waiting for the police, and he says to his ally, Gray came up to me while I was sitting and hit me, so I had to hit him back. So he's trying to justify that his was self-defense, obviously, right?
Eyewitness testimony that didn't happen.
No, it's on the tape. If you let me have 2 minutes, I can demonstrate.
What's the other? I'm confused what you're saying. So he was saying later that Greg walked up to me and punched me. And how do we know that's not true? Besides that, you're saying that's not true.
Because if I'm walking, you hear the tape always has this loud scratching noise.
You would have heard it on the tape.
You would have heard me walking.
You walked across the floor. from the door over to the steps. You would have heard it. When you listen to the tape, you would realize
that. Yeah. It doesn't matter where he said it. He could claim that he was sitting anywhere. If I walk up to him, you would hear the scratching, very loud scratching noise, right? That I can reproduce in front of you right now or in front of the jury. It's absolutely clear that when I walk, that's the scratching noise it makes, right? It's reproducible. Yet, for the 3 seconds before the fight starts, and you can hear it right away, for the 3 seconds before the fight begins, it's absolute silence, except for our talking. It's absolute silence. So, therefore, he could not have been sitting anywhere with me walking up to him, because you would have heard the scratching on the recording. That's the proof that he's lying, that 6 minutes and 3 seconds. So again, my question is, why would he lie if I actually hit him first and then he had a reason to do that?
Is there anything else either of you would like to share with me?
No, I think that's pretty much it.
I have the documents you emailed as well. Are there additional documents?
Oh,
is this a flash drive?
Yeah, it's a USB.
Oh, okay.
So it has the, it's from my Apple 5D. So it has the two recordings from August 24th, showing him how he acts, how he lies, and how he claimed the security cameras were there, which would make me not want to do anything where there might be security cameras. But then he has the two tapes from the day of the assault,
mm-hmm.
the one when it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't make the 911 call.
Well, you said it's kind of like towards the end of when it's happening, right?
Everything that happens that's important, except for his statement, 6 minutes and 10 seconds, is from 1 minute and 19 seconds when I first opened the door,
mm-hmm.
to 2 minutes and 10 seconds when the fight takes place, and once I'm knocked out, then. So it's that 50 seconds, that's all the crucial stuff, which helps show he was not sitting, and I come up and hit him. All of that proves that if you listen to
the it's pretty clear it happens at the door. You hear the door open, and then
it happens.
You don't hear anybody walking
right. Mm-hmm. So if what he says at 6 minutes and 3 seconds is true, that I just walk up and hit him while he was sitting, you would hear the scratchiness as I'm walking up before I hit him. But you don't hear that. Therefore, he's lying. Why would he lie? Well, of course he has to lie.
And also, like, you'll see, like, you know, on the earlier video from August, he's recording with his phone out there. So his account that he's recording it with his phone is credible. And the fact that he didn't show that shows that he doesn't believe that it's helpful to him.
Oh, right. On the second video, the police ask him about the security cameras.
Yeah.
And he does not offer them anything. He doesn't say at that point at all.
Like,
but
he asked about cameras?
Yeah.
Huh? No, I mean, he doesn't, at that point he would think, he would say,
I've got
a video of Craig attacking
me. Like, there's clearly a period of time where the officers are trying to figure out what to do. And, you know, if he had a video, he knew he had a video, but he would have shown it to them and said, look, you here, I've got proof. But he didn't, because he knows that he would be aggressive. So, you know, look, you know, we appreciate you meeting with us and letting us make a pitch. You know, just I'll give you my card.
Sure. Thank you. Okay. There's nothing else I'll walk you off then?
Yep.
All right.
Well, I mean, I have so much else, but I don't know where that. If I did it, I wouldn't know.
I know.
I would be so long over here.
Next chapter.
I would be so.
Can I have this for now and I'll return it?
No, keep it.
Oh.
It's yours.
I'll mail it back to you.
No, keep it. I've got many of them from my IBM days and other days, so give it, you know, use it, reuse it, do well. I wish. Well, we were
Well, Dave will tell you. Dave will tell you that even if you're right, you're risking yourself if you're there dependent. I just want to get him under all the rules so all the different.
I
have some. Well, what he's telling you is just a lot of work. So I was hoping that it would go to trial.
Anything he's going to say, I think he's going to look like a liar. So that's why I think
his lie at 6 minutes and 3 seconds.
Right. So that's kind of why I kept harping on that. Like, you know, I think that's
so two lies.
I think that's very
significant. A liable omission.
No, but if you have a videotape of an incident and you don't turn it over, you don't show it to anyone, you're guilty.
Yeah.
You know you're guilty.
But you know what he'll say. Oh, I wasn't really videotaping.
No.
That's what he'll say.
No, well, then he should have told them that he was pretending to videotape. You know, he didn't. Uh-huh. He didn't say that. You know, and nobody's ever going to believe that you're pretending to videotape and you weren't actually. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to ever believe that.
Yeah.
Especially when there's another video.
He might say that he was not even holding the camera.
Oh, you know, he can totally deny it, but I don't think he'll be believed on that.
I would hope. I'm more. If anyone's going to believe, that's why all the previous stuff where he's lying. And in fact, I hope he looks at the one, the two tapes with the two tapes on. Where did you go? From Canal. Okay, I can do that. So the, I hope she looked at the recording from August 24th, because again, it shows him lying into his own. I mean, it shows how ridiculous and malicious it is, and how stupid it is. Here he is, knowing that I'm taping him, he is lying, he's saying things into his own camera, into his own video that are palpably false. Oh, I'm walking down the stairs, and yet there he is blocking. Like, what? You don't realize that I'm capturing you saying this lie? And, like, are you, like, he's stupid at times.
But, you know, like, I do, you know, I know they don't, they don't want to do. They're doing, like, everything, you know, her...
Her whole demeanor, right from the beginning.
This is a case she doesn't want. She's meeting this because, meeting us because...
PR.
Bit of a
problem. PR, right?
Right. And, but,
you know, can I appeal by myself? I don't want to get drag you into it so that if she won't do it, can I call the supervisor and say, look, this is really, and she never even looked fully at the evidence. Can you give me the reason why it's not provable beyond reasonable doubt? When the guy lies by omission, and... I mean, if they... Right, well, let's see what their decision is. I mean, it doesn't sound like she's going to come back favorably given her reaction. I mean, when I went there 3 years ago, they were telling me before I left, we're going to have Laser and maybe Joey arrested. Even before I left, they were.
Right. Well, I knew they weren't going to do that.
Well, of course, supervisor, because, yeah, when I met with Carol, ABA Carol, her supervisor, Levinson, was in the same room as the two of them. So they asked to speak with each other, and I left, and when I went back, they said, yes, it's convincing. We're going to arrest them. And then they flip-flop a number of months later. I think I know the reason why, too. The father had been spying on a neighbor a number of years before, and I caught him. And I was so shocked, and he wasn't even embarrassed. He was nonplussed about it. He just turned around and said, oh, somebody's throwing stuff out in the back, trash. And yet he had his ear up to the door, listening intently, right, of the gay guy who had a black boyfriend. And remember, Tommy hates black, right? So I just kind of went on my way, and I'm thinking, wow, how disgusting, right? And that was 2005, so I thought over a few years, how would I stop him from spying on me? But it wasn't a big issue, so I didn't even really think about it much until I got arrested. And then I'm sitting in the jail cell for 3 hours, and I knew the evidence that I had. So I knew I was going to get, you know, that I would then be able to defeat it, their charge. And I was thinking, what else? But now I was pissed, right, that they had all. So I was like, what else can I get? How do I get him from spying? Can I? And remember Monica Lewinsky, where was it Linda Tripp or whoever it was, right? And then got punished herself for illegally.
Right.
So I'm thinking, and I find out in fact, I knew from a couple months before that recording two other people is illegal.
Right.
But I knew they were going to be spying on me. So I thought, you know what? My wife and I should dramatize sitting at the dinner table and yet have a copy of it with the right, what we were doing,
mm-hmm.
where we would pretend that I broke the window a day before.
Right.
So it wouldn't affect the... You know, I wasn't in fact saying I did it when they were claiming I was doing it, but I thought, you know what, I bet you if they're spying on myself, catch this and they'll try to use it somehow. And sure enough, I think they did.
Okay.
But no one has ever confessed to it, and the police, I think, may have seen it. And, and I let ADA, I let Carol know this in writing, because I had a feeling that the police...
police were. You're going from Brooklyn, right?
Yeah, well, yeah,
okay. So my last, I got to take the other way.
Okay.
So my last thing was, I think the police got, and they thought it was real. And I'm thinking, I never accounted for the fact that it would be so persuasive that that the police would then use it instead of going, no, this is illegal recording. And I still believe to this day that they showed other people and said, but Greg is admitting that he did.
Okay.
And yet I can't find it. So when I wrote to Carol about this, and I said, look, this is what I have, and I bet you they committed another crime. Because I put it in writing, she wrote back to me and said, Greg, do you realize? He was mad at me. She said, Greg, do you realize that we have to give all this stuff to the... And I said, no, I'm new at this. Well, I'm just...
So you gotta be careful. That's why I told you that's what I mean.
No, I would not.
They don't want that. They don't want that, you know.
So I think she would, I think maybe that was one of the factors. She went, you know, like, we're going to have to explain all of this. How do we do that? You know, we got this candidate who's trying to do a sting operation without the police. And
Ed
didn't like that either. Ed didn't like that either. He said, it's just going to be weird to tell him. I said, well, how else do you catch somebody? How else can you catch somebody? I can't put a camera there because they'll take it away if it's in the hall. Well, I thought it was pretty clever myself. Well, obviously I was wrong.
Well,
yeah, but it seemed to have backfired. So I have a feeling that's the reason why, in spite of the promise, but she wouldn't come. So this time, I hope they'll give us, and if they say no, I'd like to have a reason why. But hopefully the supervisor... Okay. Hopefully they would, and you think that Shola and taking into the tape or the...
Thank you. Sorry.
Please don't hold your voice over.